Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of Scott Kolodgyi. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Scott Kolodgyi was born on September 1, 2001, and lived in Long Branch, New Jersey. This is a rundown coastal town. On one side of the boardwalk, there is the Atlantic Ocean. On the other side, profound and unceasing disappointment. Scott was raised by his parents, Stephen and Linda, in a duplex at 635 Wall Street. This, of course, is not the Wall Street in New York City, rather the New Jersey version, dirtier, louder, and plagued by an odor that scientists still cannot identify. Scott had three older siblings, Jonathan, Stephen Jr., and Brittany. His aunt and uncle, Michelle and Richard Molyneux, lived in the basement. Scott was developmentally delayed. He was isolated and did not have any friends. A mental health clinician diagnosed him with ADHD. An MRI revealed that Scott had a brain abnormality, which led to several of his family members believing he had a brain tumor. It wasn't actually a brain tumor, but the abnormality could have been evidence of damage to his brain. Scott often slept in his parents' bed, even though he had a bed of his own in a bedroom he shared with his brother, Stephen Jr. In school, Scott had a rough time socially. After being bullied by his classmates, his parents moved him to a school for students with special needs. Scott's parents had severe financial problems. Their employment situation was often rocky. There were multiple mortgages on the duplex, and they filed for bankruptcy in 2009. By 2017, the family was facing foreclosure. Before moving to the timeline of the crime, let's hear a word from today's sponsor. Christmas comes with a lot of gifts, but how often do they actually stick with you? Most are glanced at once, then forgotten. This year, I found something truly special. The book, The Ultimate Guide to Rebuilding a Civilization. It's not just a book you can read once, but one which will keep you coming back. Every page is an invitation to explore science, architecture, history, and invention, to rethink what is possible. With over 400 pages, 180 topics, 23 chapters, and illustrations that blend engineering drawings with medieval art, it is carefully crafted, beautiful, and unlike anything that is mass-produced. Flipping through it, you will find yourself inspired, reflecting on human progress, creativity, and the incredible things people are capable of. It's the kind of gift that doesn't sit on a shelf. It's revisited, shared, and treasured. It sparks curiosity, wonder, and thought, making it meaningful and memorable. If you want a gift that actually matters this Christmas, this is it. Follow the link in the description to get your copy with a special Christmas discount. Promo code DrGrande10. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On December 31, 2017, New Year's Eve, at 11:43 p.m., the police received two 911 calls reporting a shooting at the Kolodgyi family home in Long Branch, New Jersey. When they arrived, they placed 16-year-old Scott Kolodgyi under arrest. There were four dead bodies in his house. 44-year-old Linda Kolodgyi, 42-year-old Stephen Kolodgyi Sr., 18-year-old Brittany Kolodgyi, and 70-year-old Mary Ann Schultz, who was the girlfriend of Scott's grandfather. Scott referred to her as his grandmother. All the victims had been shot to death by Scott with a rifle that was lawfully owned by his brother, Stephen Jr. Here is what the police found during the course of their investigation. Scott's family was having a New Year's Eve party, which included 10 people in total. They gathered in the living room and watched the movie Kong Skull Island. At about 11 p.m., Scott went upstairs to his bedroom. About 40 minutes later, his mother Linda walked upstairs to get him so he would not miss the celebration at midnight. From inside his bedroom, which was dark, Scott shot Linda five times with his brother's rifle, killing her. The weapon was a Century Arms C-39 V2, which is similar to an AK-47. As Stephen Sr. ran upstairs to investigate, Scott shot him in the back and in the head. Stephen Sr. did not survive. At this point, Scott walked down the stairs wearing a black jacket and sunglasses, kind of like from the movie The Terminator. There were earplugs in his ears, and he maintained a stern and cold look on his face. He walked through the living room into the kitchen, where he shot Mary Ann Schultz twice, and his sister Brittany twice. Both victims died as a result. Scott could have continued shooting people because other potential victims, like his grandfather, were near him, but he went upstairs and put the rifle down. The police interviewed Scott. He told them that he had seen and heard stuff that was not there. For example, he saw a pinkish mass staring out from a neighbor's house, a transparent woman floating near his bedroom ceiling, a woman on his neighbor's roof, and red faces on a wall in his house. For about 1 or 2 years, Scott had thoughts about hurting his family. On the night of the shooting, he started thinking about bad moments in school. Everything came together, and he was just tired of it. He retrieved his brother's rifle from the closet, loaded 2 magazines, and put one of those magazines in the rifle. As he was doing this, he questioned himself, but he could not stop. During the shooting, Scott did not have an emotional response. It was like he was watching a movie. He confessed to murdering his mother, father, and his sister, as well as Mary Ann Schultz. When he saw his grandfather, this confused him, and it pushed him out of his trance. This is why Scott stopped the attack. Realizing it would be undesirable to be shot by the police, Scott put his rifle down and surrendered. During the interview, he asked the police if he could be placed in a mental institution. Scott Kolodzi was charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of possession of a firearm for an unlawful purpose. His defense was not based on the idea that he didn't carry out the shooting, rather that Scott met the definition of legal insanity. On February 23, 2022, Scott Kolodzi was found guilty of all charges. On June 30 of that same year, he was sentenced to 150 years in prison. His release date is June 29, 2145. At that time, Scott will be 143 years old. Now moving to my analysis. Scott Kolodzi did not deny carrying out the attack, but his defense argued that he was not responsible for his behavior due to legal insanity. The state of New Jersey, of course, disagreed. They argued that Scott knew the difference between right and wrong. This meant he did not qualify as legally insane. This brings me to the question, is Scott guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that he is guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. A mental health clinician for the prosecution said that Scott had autism spectrum disorder and obsessive compulsive disorder, but he did not have schizophrenia or an intellectual disability. He was not psychotic. That is, he did not suffer from auditory or visual hallucinations or from delusions. Even if this clinician was wrong, the hallucinations did not appear to drive Scott's behavior. For instance, he told the police that the hallucinations did not command him to carry out the homicides. Scott appeared to understand the difference between right and wrong and said he knew what he was doing when he killed the victims. He continued to fire at each victim until they stopped moving, because he wanted to make sure they were dead. On the night of the shooting, at 7:32 p.m., Scott searched the internet on his cell phone, wanting to know if an AK-47, which is similar to the weapon he used in the attack, would penetrate body armor. At 7:43 p.m., he made 2 searches, Preparation Theme Music and London Terror Rampage Hoax Flat Earth Concerns. Moving to the exculpatory factors, a mental health clinician for the defense said that Scott had early onset schizophrenia, was paranoid, and suffered a dissociative episode on the night of the shooting. Scott initially told the police that he did not have any auditory hallucinations on the night of the shooting, but later he changed his story. He said he heard a voice in the shower saying, "Welcome to the side of evil." Scott indicated that he had a visual hallucination on the night of the shooting. He saw a white light outside his window earlier in the evening. Over the course of at least a year, Scott repeatedly told people that he had homicidal thoughts, and he asked to see a mental health clinician. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Scott is guilty of murder? Yes, I believe he is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. He understood the nature and quality of his actions and understood the difference between right and wrong. He was not legally insane. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Scott Kolodzi had several mental health symptoms, although there is disagreement about what disorders he met the diagnostic criteria for. One could argue that he had symptoms consistent with ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, OCD, and schizophrenia. Scott was paranoid, socially awkward, and impulsive. His gullibility really stood out. He was often taken advantage of by his peers. And even at age 16, he believed in Santa Claus. Scott's lack of empathy was pronounced. When loved ones would die, he would say, "It happens." His affect was flat and inappropriate, and he made limited eye contact. Many of his family members incorrectly assumed he had a brain tumor based on the results of an MRI, but Scott may have actually had some brain damage. After being bullied in school, Scott would obsess about the offenders who mistreated him. Over time, he developed homicidal thoughts. He mentioned these thoughts to several people, including his mother, his grandfather, his aunt, and his uncle. Scott repeatedly told his mother, Linda, that he wanted to talk to a mental health clinician because he was having bad thoughts about hurting people, which included killing members of his family. He even detailed the order of the murders and the motive for killing each victim. When he asked Linda why he couldn't tell a mental health clinician about killing his family, she would respond with something like, "They will take you away to the loony bin." Scott told Linda that he might have to hurt her. She responded, "You wouldn't hurt me." Scott said, "I'd have to, and then Dad would be second because he would be sad without Mom being there." Despite these explicit threats, Linda refused to get mental health assistance for Scott. In October 2017, when Scott's Aunt Michelle and Uncle Richard were playing the board game Clue with him, he picked up the revolver game piece and pointed it at Michelle. He said, "I'm going to kill you." He then pointed the revolver at Richard and said, "And kill you after I come down from upstairs after taking Mom and Dad out." Linda threatened to kick Michelle and Richard out of the house if they told anyone about this disturbing incident. On New Year's Eve in 2017, Scott decided that he was going to murder people. The gun used in the attack had previously been stored in a safe, but it rusted while it was in there. This led to it being stored unsecured in a case inside the closet he shared with his brother, Stephen Jr. This is perfectly legal in the state of New Jersey. The state does have a law that makes it unlawful to have an unsecured weapon around a minor. However, for the purposes of this law, a minor is defined as someone under 16 years old. Scott was 16, so again, no law was broken. Legislation has been proposed to raise the age to 18, although that doesn't help the Kolodzi family. After the murders, Scott felt badly about his actions and said he doubted he would do it again, but he wasn't sure. It sounds like he's not ruling out committing murder in the future. As far as what motivated Scott, it's not exactly clear. His obsessiveness, impulsivity, and lack of empathy probably did contribute to the murders to some degree. He was also angry about being bullied in school. The main contributing factor was Scott making the decision to kill, which is why prison is the right place for him. Now moving to my final thoughts. There are two lessons that can be learned in this case. The first lesson is that when a person repeatedly states they have homicidal thoughts and they would like to be treated by a mental health clinician, this request should not be dismissed. Scott's mother, Linda, wanted to protect him from being sent to what she referred to as the loony bin. Well, now she's dead, along with three other people, and her son is in prison. She literally heard Scott tell her how he was going to kill his family members, and she was like, "Well, that's great and all, but you need to avoid being held in a mental health facility. Receiving treatment involuntarily would be the worst possible outcome in this situation." Linda's unwise strategy did not work out too well. The second lesson is to never have unsecured firearms in a residence, even if it is legal. If Scott never had access to a firearm, his ability to kill based on his impulses would have been greatly limited. Even though he was responsible for his own behavior, Scott was put in a tough position. He was facing many challenges: multiple mental health symptoms, a family that was on the brink of financial disaster, access to a rifle, and he lived in New Jersey. Those are my thoughts on the case of Scott Kolodzi. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.